from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda, and we begin at the U.S. Capitol. That's where President Donald Trump gave his first address to a joint session of Congress last night. The president made or reaffirmed about two dozen promises in the speech, including this one.
We will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border.
The Trump administration has opened up bids for the project, and companies will have until next Friday to submit their design concepts. So far, there's no price tag on how much the wall would cost. There's already a 21-foot metal border fence between California and Mexico for the vast majority of the border. The cost of the current fence per mile is $85 million over the next 25 years. Moving on now to the University of California, it has released more than 100 records detailing complaints of sexual harassment, assault, and violence on UC campuses. This release was not a routine document dump. It came after a request from KQED and other media outlets. The 113 reports span a nearly 3.5-year period between 2013 and April of 2016. 3/4 of the cases involved complaints made against university staff, and 1/4 involved faculty. To discuss this, we're joined now by the senior editor of our California Politics and Government desk, Scott Schaefer. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, John.
So what exactly do these 113 reports document?
So, John, these are cases of investigations of sexual misbehavior at UC's 10 campuses. Now, these are cases where wrongdoing was found, and in most cases, there was some kind of punishment or discipline. These were investigations that were undertaken under by the Title IX
federal education rules.
Federal education rules. And a few years ago, the Obama administration sent advice to schools saying you can use Title IX to investigate these kinds of claims. And that's really what these reports are. These are the results of those Title IX investigations.
Now, all sexual harassment is not acceptable, and assault is not acceptable. But it seems that there is a big range between relatively minor cases with some more significant cases. Walk us through those.
Yeah, so the range, it is a wide range from inappropriate or abusive comments. A lot of them are made via texting, which shouldn't be a surprise nowadays. The behavior in some cases includes groping, stalking, sexual advances, having inappropriate even sex toys on desks.
Like they were bringing sex toys to the workplace?
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, when you read through these reports, and we're just beginning to read through them, it's just sort of astonishing the kinds of things that people do in the workplace in these cases. And we should say, look, these are 113 cases. There's about 250,000 employees at UC in the UC system. So it is a small number, but not an insignificant number of cases, certainly to the people involved. There is at least one rape that we found. But as I said, we're still going through these. Each case, John, is 10 to 20 pages or even more. So we're still just going through them.
Now, UC Berkeley, and to a certain extent, UCLA, has been kind of the focus of these particular cases. The UC Berkeley Law School dean, for example, had a very high-profile case. What steps have been taken since then to improve these universities' responses to sexual misconduct?
Yeah, you're right. UC Berkeley had gotten a lot of attention, and in fact, they released a lot of these kinds of documents a year ago. But UC President Janet Napolitano has made it very clear that this is not acceptable to either not investigate these cases or to go light in terms of punishment. She formed a task force to look at take a comprehensive approach to addressing sexual harassment and violence across the UC system. She even created a new position, a Title IX coordinator for the entire system. Her name is Kathleen Salvati. She just started the job at the beginning of February, and I spoke with her before these reports were released, and I asked her, what's at stake for UC in getting these policies about sexual harassment and assault right? And here's what she had to say.
I come back to that issue of access, right? Equal access. That's what's at stake, ensuring that our students and our employees can access their education free from discrimination, which includes sexual violence and sexual harassment.
And John, the release of these cases certainly is an effort by the university to send the signal that we want people to come forward and we will take them seriously.
Great reporting from your team that consisted of Lisa Pickoff-White, Marisa Lagos, and of course, Scott Schaefer, senior editor for our California Politics and Government desk. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Moving on now, California's safety net took a big hit when the economy crashed in 2009. But as it's rebounded in recent years, many programs have seen their budgets grow again. One exception, the publicly funded program that provides a monthly income to many low-income, disabled, and elderly Californians. Marisa Lagos visited one recipient of the program at an Oakland community center recently, and she sent us this report.
Wilma Brown became homeless 7 years ago when she finally summoned the courage to leave an abusive relationship.
I just left, packed up everything and left everything behind and just left, hoping I would never see this person again. And I've been homeless ever since.
A few years later, Brown hurt her back and had to leave her job in retail. Since then, she's been on a government program known as Supplemental Security Income, or SSI. It provides cash grants to more than a million low-income Californians who can't work but don't qualify for Social Security. It's funded largely by the federal government, but California kicks in a little extra to help supplement the federal portion. Brown's income, all told, $895 a month. That's below the federal poverty line.
It's really tough, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck, not knowing where your next meal is coming from.
SSI payments have always been modest. But since the economic downturn, recipients in California have seen even smaller checks. Starting in 2010, the state began cutting its portion of the monthly payments. By 2012, that state contribution had fallen by $77 a month. $77 a month may not sound like a big deal, but Jani Castillo says every cent counts when you're living in poverty. Castillo works at St. Mary's Center in Oakland, a nonprofit that provides services to at-risk seniors, including Wilma Brown.
Even $10 is a big difference when you're on the streets looking for food. It could mean transportation. It could mean maybe even getting your clothes washed. Can you imagine not being able to wear clean clothes?
This year, recipients saw the state offer a $4 per month cost of living increase to SSI recipients. It's the first time California has done so in 12 years. Department of Finance spokesman H.D. Palmer says the governor has agreed to restore many cuts made during the recession and has added billions of dollars back to anti-poverty programs in recent years. Palmer says the cost of living increase for SSI recipients is part of that.
If the grant levels were to be restored to their pre-recession levels, the cost to the general fund for that alone would probably run in the neighborhood of several billion dollars. So the question then becomes, where do you take those monies from?
But advocates for the poor are pushing for more. Andrew Shine works for the Association of California Food Banks. He says Californians receiving SSI generally don't qualify for other public programs.
The population is predominantly women from communities of color, black, Latina, Asian American women who have faced the kinds of challenges we heard from Wilma. Maybe they've had to care for family members. Maybe they've experienced barriers in the labor force and the job market, which has prevented folks from being able to save for older age, and now they're forced to live on an inhuman amount.
He and others are hoping that as the budget process plays out in Sacramento this spring, they can convince lawmakers and the governor to invest more in SSI. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
Today's surveyors head to the Sierra Nevada for their monthly check of the snowpack. Right now, snows are packing nearly double the water potential as in normal years at the same time. Now, to be sure, this wet weather has caused a ton of problems this winter, but there has been an upside. There will be more electricity. Reporter Susan Vallett explains why.
With all of the rain filling up lakes, California's power industry is trying to figure out how they're going to incorporate a potentially big influx of hydroelectric power from dams this summer. Andrew McAllister of the California Energy Commission says during the drought, the low lakes meant the state had to rely more on power plants that use fossil fuels.
Now that we have a bit more hydro resource we can use, then the carbon content of our power will go down, and this year should look relatively better than some of the previous years.
It's the job of the California Independent System Operator, or CAISO, to direct that power where it needs to go through the state's transmission grid. It's about balance. Different utilities want different kinds of power to meet their portfolios. But CalISO's Peter Clower says higher lakes mean more hydroelectric power will flow through California from power plants like that at Oroville Dam.
Well, you'll see it reflected in the wholesale market, and that's the way the wholesale market works, is that it's a competitive market, so you've got bid in supply and you've got demand also and what people are willing to buy energy for. And when there's an abundance of energy, you know, prices will go down.
But that doesn't necessarily mean your electricity bill will go down. That all depends if your utility passes that savings to you. For the California Report, I'm Susan Vallett.
Support for the California Report comes from Robotham International, providing strategic tax, accounting, and business advisory services to global families, entrepreneurs, and venture-backed companies. Robotham.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, honoring the recipients of the 2017 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. Learn more at irvine.org.
Well, despite recent claims to the contrary, it's still pretty tough to get into the United States. Take this story from KQED's own Carly Severin. She was on a plane that was leaving from London to San Francisco this morning, but she couldn't go because of a mouse. According to Severin, the crew said that the plane couldn't enter America with an unaccounted for animal. This is at least the third time since 2001 that a mouse has grounded an international flight. And that's the California Report for Wednesday, March 1st, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Spolvido. Have a great day.